Herod revolted from the laws of his country and corrupted their ancient constitution by the introduction of foreign practices, which constitution yet ought to have been preserved inviolable, by which means we became guilty of great wickedness afterward, while those religious observances which used to lead the multitude to piety were now neglected. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 68, Between Jerusalem and Caesarea. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. It is one of the most important scenes in the history of Jewish athletics, and it did not technically involve anyone Jewish. Don Drysdale was pitching for the Dodgers in the first game of the World Series because Sandy Koufax had abstained out of respect for Yom Kippur. As Jane Levy tells us in her magnificent biography of Koufax, Drysdale was hammered by the batters, and when the manager, Walter Alston, walked up to the mound to relieve him, Drysdale uttered the immortal words, "Hey, Skip, bet you wish I was Jewish today, too." It is a tale that captures how, from the Judaic perspective, while athletic skill can indeed be a gift from God, we must always remember that there is something higher, someone greater than ourselves, that all we have is through his gift, and that true heroism highlights our recognition of this fact. It is therefore entirely understandable that the athletic spectacles of the ancient Greco-Roman world, whose gladiatorial games reflected no veneration for human life, was considered an immoral pagan spectacle by the Jews of the time. And athletics itself in that era, if performed as a form of human divination, glorification of the naked body, or worshipful honoring of the Caesar, was itself also, obviously, considered problematic. It is therefore with this in mind that we can contrast Jerusalem in the Herodian era with another city in the Holy Land, one whose name we know today, but whose identity is very different in our own age. Perhaps the greatest description of the clash between Herod and the Jews can be found in Josephus, who explains in this passage how Herod was driven by desire for glory, something that the Romans understood, but which for the Jews marked Herod as an unrighteous statesman and ruler. Here is how Josephus put it, writing of Herod. He reflects, quote, "As to his own court, therefore, if anyone was not very obsequious to him in his language and would not confess himself to be a slave, or but seemed to think of any innovation in his government, he was not able to contain himself, but prosecuted his very kindred and friends and punished them as if they were enemies. And this wickedness he undertook out of a desire that he might be himself alone honored. Now for this, my assertion about that passion of his, we have the greatest evidence by what he did to honor Caesar and Agrippa and his other friends. For with what honors he paid his respects to them who were his superiors, the same did he desire to be paid to himself. And what he thought the most excellent present he could make another, he discovered an inclination to have the like presented to himself. But now the Jewish nation is by their law a stranger to all such things, and accustomed to prefer righteousness to glory, for which reason that nation was not agreeable to him, because it was out of their power to flatter the king's ambition with statues or temples or any other such performances. And this seems to me to have been at once the occasion of Herod's crimes as to his own courtiers and counselors, and of his benefactions as to foreigners and those that had no relation to him." End quote. Thus, what Herod appreciated was entirely different from that appreciated by his subjects. As the historian Martin Goodman notes, this meant that the song and dance conducted by the Jews of Jerusalem would have been very different from that embraced by Herod himself, as well as that found throughout the rest of the Roman Empire. Goodman cites the rabbinic description of the annual celebration in the temple on Sukkot, the festival we discussed yesterday, which was described by the Talmud as the summit of Jewish joy. Describing the temple, the rabbis write, quote, "Men of piety and good works used to dance before them with burning torches in their hands, singing songs and praises, with countless Levites on harps, lyres, cymbals, and trumpets, and instruments of music, on the 15 steps leading down from the court of the Israelites to the court of women, corresponding to the 15 songs of ascents in the Psalms. Upon them the Levites used to stand with instruments of music and utter a song." End quote. Thus, the singing, the dancing, was all to the glory of God, all in service of Judaism. Goodman also notes the remarkable Mishnah describing Yom Kippur afternoon in Jerusalem, when young women and men would go out to the field to find potential spouses. Quote, "The daughters of Jerusalem go forth and dance in the vineyards, and what did they used to say? Young man, lift up your eyes and see what you choose for yourself. set not your eyes on beauty, but set your eyes on family. And Goodman adds, quote, all of these practices differed greatly from Roman enjoyment of the art of skilled slave dancing girls after dinner, or the public performance of mime, end quote. And Goodman further writes that this would mean that someone from elsewhere in the empire would have been surprised by how culturally apart Jerusalem was. Quote, a Roman coming to Jerusalem would thus find not just a pale imitation of the culture in the metropolis, such as he would experience in many towns in the western provinces of the empire, but a society whose entire lifestyle seemed bound up in its idiosyncratic religion. Public spectacle was centered around the temple, rather than entertainments in theater or circus. Intellectual debate took place between religious enthusiasts rather than orators and philosophers, and the rhythms of the city followed the temple calendar, the whole populace hushed at rest each Saturday, the pilgrims greeted in their many thousands each spring and autumn, end quote. But there was another city in the Holy Land that was created in this era, one of an entirely different culture and character, one which retains its name today, one created by Herod and named to honor Augustus Caesar, Caesarea or Caesarea. And when we compare Josephus' account of its creation and dedication to Herod's refurbishment of the temple, we notice the difference immediately. Josephus writes about Herod as follows, quote, about this time it was that Caesarea Sebasti, which he had built, was finished, the entire building being accomplished in the 10th year. The solemnity of it fell into the 28th year of Herod's reign and into the 192nd Olympiad. There was accordingly a great festival and most sumptuous preparations made presently in order to its dedication. For he had appointed a contention in music and games to be performed naked. He had also gotten ready a great number of those that fight single combats, and of beasts for the like purpose. Horse races also, and the most chargeable of such sports and shows as used to be exhibited at Rome and in other places. End quote. We have thus a city in the Holy Land, which is in every way Greco-Roman, at the very same time that the temple stood in Jerusalem. Josephus further tells us that non-Jews that came from around the empire embraced the city, and that Roman leaders themselves admired Herod's embrace of the Greco-Roman ways. Quote, and it is related that Caesar and Agrippa often said that the dominions of Herod were too little for the greatness of his soul, for that he deserved to have both all the kingdom of Syria and that of Egypt also. End quote. The Roman response, in other words, can be captured by the famous line of Russell Crowe in the movie Gladiator, words he uttered to the bloodthirsty crowd that cheered as men were killed. He said, are you not entertained? They were indeed entertained. But those that were not entertained were the actual Jewish inhabitants of Judea. And they were even less entertained when Herod attempted to introduce the same spectacles in Jerusalem itself. Josephus writes again, quote, Herod revolted from the laws of his country and corrupted their ancient constitution by the introduction of foreign practices, which constitution yet ought to have been preserved inviolable. By which means we became guilty of great wickedness afterward, while those religious observances which used to lead the multitude to piety were now neglected. For in the first place he appointed solemn games to be celebrated every 5th year in honor of Caesar, and built a theater at Jerusalem and also a very great amphitheater in the plain. End quote. Josephus further adds that Herod honored not only the Greco-Roman ways, but Caesar himself, providing trophies to the winners that lauded the emperor. All this, as Josephus adds in a truly important passage, meant that while the visitors to the city often reveled in these Roman exercises, the residents of Jerusalem themselves despised them. Quote, truly foreigners were greatly surprised and delighted at the vastness of the expenses here exhibited and at the great dangers that were here seen. But to natural Jews, this was no better than a dissolution of those customs for which they had so great a veneration. It appeared also no better than an instance of barefaced impiety to throw men to wild beasts for the affording delight to the spectators, and it appeared an instance of no less impiety to change their own laws for such foreign exercises, end quote. The appearance of these games led, as Josephus tells us, to another violent episode in Jerusalem, with those offended by the spectacles conspiring against Herod. Upon the conspiracy being found out, Herod had the conspirators executed, with other Jews in Jerusalem then in turn executing the spy who had revealed the plot to the king. But as Goodman notes, despite the imposition of pagan spectacle in Jerusalem, it did not take, and gladiatorial games disappeared from Jerusalem after Herod's death. Today, when one visits Jerusalem on Sukkot, the celebrations on the Temple Mount have not been restored. But the city is filled with song and dance, all to the glory of God, all inspired by the holiday celebrations that took place in temple times. And the Jews are increasingly joined on Sukkot by Christians from different parts of the world who are inspired by the prophet Zechariah's description of the nations coming to Jerusalem to mark the holiday. Celebrations such as these highlight, as my friend Eric Cohn has written, how for people of faith today, Jerusalem, as it was during the Second Temple period, stands as a beacon to biblical faith in a time when values contrary to the biblical perspective are being embraced more and more by larger society. In one of the great films about athletics and faith, Chariots of Fire, the religious runner Eric Little, right before running in the 400 meter, is handed a piece of paper with the words, "It says in the old book, he who honors me, I will honor. He who honors me, I will honor." This is a paraphrase from the book of Samuel. Herod's Caesarea honored Caesar, and Jerusalem in that age honored God. Caesarea today still exists, while the empire of the Caesars is gone. And one will find in Caesarea that the greatest of gatherings today are convened not to mark Greco-Roman moments, but Jewish ones. Thus, in the spring and the fall, the hotels there are filled, not with those who have come to attend the gladiatorial games, but rather with those who have arrived to celebrate Passover and Sukkot, with so many of their celebrations there ending with the words, "next year in Jerusalem." The city is still named for Caesar, but Caesar is gone, and Judaism and Jerusalem remains. That alone is so remarkable that it can inspire our faith that all for which Jews pray about Jerusalem during the holidays will one day be fulfilled. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.